From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 2013 on Genesee Park Boulevard in Rochester at a place known as the Crisis Nursery. A mother named Kendra was in trouble. She had four kids, and her youngest son, Lorenzo, needed surgery. Kendra was not able to care for the three healthy kids while helping Lorenzo recover from surgery, so she turned to the Crisis Nursery for child care help. While Kendra was with Lorenzo, staff members at the nursery called her with updates three, sometimes four times a day, and at night the children came home with food and clothing. Fast forward to this spring. Kendra was 2 weeks away from finishing her coursework at Monroe Community College, and she learned that she lost her child care provider for her daughter. Just like 2013, Kendra went back to the Crisis Nursery. These are the moments that can destroy a family. They can force a parent to drop out of school, lose a job, put children at risk. This hour, we not only look at the Crisis Nursery, we look at the challenges faced by young families, often single mothers, not always. And let me go ahead and welcome my guest for the hour, Kendra Smallwood, who I was just describing. Kendra's here. She's a parent of four. She's going to talk about her story. Great to have you here, Kendra. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Elaine Spall's here, the Executive Director of the Center for Youth. Elaine, welcome to you.
Hi, Evan.
Valerie Douglas is here, Center for Youth Senior Manager. Valerie, welcome to you.
Good afternoon.
And Marty Sandler's here. Marty is the Chief Social Worker at Golisano Children's Hospital. Welcome to you as well.
Pleasure to be here.
Kendra, let me kind of work through your story to make sure I understand it. I want to go back to 2013 first, if we could.
Okay.
Tell me about Lorenzo. What was going on?
He had a hernia in his pelvic area. Initially, I went to Rochester General, and then they transferred us to Strong, and they said they wanted to do surgery on him immediately. I wanted to stay with him because he was so young, only 1 year old.
Wow.
And my other children, who were 3, 5, and 7 at the time, I didn't have anywhere for them to go because I'm not from Rochester, so I don't have a strong support system here in Rochester. My other option outside of the Crisis Nursery was to put them in temporary foster care, and that was just so drastic that I didn't even want to do that. So one of the social workers at Strong Hospital referred me to the Crisis Nursery.
Had you heard of the Crisis Nursery before?
No.
I think most people listening probably haven't, and that's one of the reasons we're having this program today. So how did that work out? How long did you need to work with them, and kind of take me through that?
Well, the initial time, it was 3 days, so I would leave the hospital during the daytime and go sit with the kids and play with them at the Crisis Nursery or take them to the park, and then I would go back at night, and they would stay overnight at the Crisis Nursery with the volunteers and staff.
Okay, and how did they do there?
They loved it. It was so, first, you know, as a mother, it was kind of nerve-wracking because I was being pulled in both directions. I wanted to be with my other three children who were fine and, you know, sleep with them and be able to be a mother to them. But at the same time, I had a small child in the hospital who had just had surgery, was on medicine. Just wanted to make sure that he made it through that process okay. So the constant phone calls, you know, reassuring that everybody was okay, everybody went to bed, everybody ate, everybody had their baths, was real comforting for me. To know that they were being taken good care of while I was in the hospital with my youngest son.
Sometimes those phone calls are the biggest things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing that they're okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the first time my son was left with in-laws, and I'm going like, I haven't heard in 28 minutes. You know, I need to know what's happening here. And that comfort is a huge thing, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, it allowed me also to focus on Lorenzo because, you know, they were calling me. I didn't have to, you know, stop what I was doing to check in on the other kids. They made sure that they called at a certain time before bed, before they ate, and if they had any questions about anything with the children.
How's Lorenzo doing?
He's good. He's very good. As soon as he left the hospital, he was back to normal, like running around at the park, and I'm like, oh no, my baby, but it's like, the doctor's like, if he runs, let him run, and I'm like, you know. So.
Well, that's great. And so that was 2013. Was he 4 years old now?
He'll be four next month at the end of June.
Very good. And so, but you went through another sort of recent stretch where you needed the crisis nursery. So kind of set the stage for us there. You were getting ready to complete coursework at MCC. What was going on?
So I had been attending MCC for 2 years at that time. And last year, my last semester, I didn't have childcare because my daughter was affected by the half-day three-year-old program. Mm. So she would go during the daytime and she would get out of school at 11, and I still had two classes to go to. So I called the Crisis Nursery because I had used them in between that time from 2013 until last year for other situations that I had encountered. And I called them and I let them know what my situation was, and I just needed that 2 weeks and to ask them to keep my daughter every day. And Julie even offered to pick her up because it was the transition that really was making my schedule hard to do. So to go pick her up from school and then take her to the crisis nursery to get back to school, I already missed the class. So Julie, she intercepted. She would pick my daughter up from school, take her to the crisis nursery, and after I finished my classes, I would go pick my daughter up and then continue to pick my other children up.
If you didn't have an option like that, what choice do you think you would have made? What do you think would have happened?
Oh, either I would have left my daughter with somebody that I really didn't know that well because I was desperate. And that's honestly, like, I was desperate to finish because it was 2 weeks. So it was like I did all this for the last 2 weeks to not be able to complete. It was just heartbreaking. On, like, I cried about it. So even my relationship with the crisis nursery is kind of like bittersweet because it's like I call them when I need them, when I'm in a hardship, and but I'm happy to see them. The kids are happy to go there. They love the volunteers, the staff there. So it's like, hey, Julie, or hey, Faith. Like, I'm going through a really bad situation, but I know they'll help me through it.
And I'm trying to, you know, paint, I think, a fair picture here, because there's a lot of parents who've probably gone through what you have, mm-hmm. which is having these moments where you've got to make a decision on childcare, on staying with school and education. Mm-hmm. You know, some parents probably end up dropping out.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was close. I was very, very close to dropping out of school. But it was, I was so close to finishing that that wasn't an option. And I knew I had crisis nursery as a support because I had already been dealing with them for a couple of years at that point.
And so you just finished up classes at MCC?
Well, that was last year.
Oh, it was last year. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and how'd it go?
I graduated. I graduated May 30 last year.
Okay. And what next for you then?
Well, I want to go to RAT, well, NTID for American Sign Language Interpretation. So that's where I want to transition to. I was also affected by Lorenzo being in the half-day three-year-old program, so I couldn't go this past September, but I look forward to going next September.
Okay. And before I turn to some of the other guests in the room, Kendra, you know, I'm sure... you know some other moms or other parents who've had to make hard choices, gone through hard moments and hard times with kids, with mm-hmm. childcare. You know, you've got four kids. Mm-hmm. What would it have done to your family if you would have had to derail your education?
Well, it would just postpone and set me back in life altogether, just dealing with my kids and being able to find good, stable employment that's sufficient for me to take care of a family of five. So it's not about just getting a job, but, you know, school is important so that you can make more money. And if I didn't have crisis nursery to complete my degree, then I would still be a step back from where I needed to be.
You think you're going to get it done?
Of course.
Yeah, that's great.
Of course.
Well, I want to ask Elaine Spall about Kendra's story, because my guess is it's pretty representative.
Yeah. You know, Evan, this is the real deal. And I got to be honest with you. I've been calling the crisis nursery the sweetest, most charming. I got to get you over there, by the way, with your wife to take a look at it. But it's the sweetest, most charming place, really, in our community. But it's also what I call a poverty buster. It is not taking prisoners. We are not going to let our kids go to places. Kendra said this, and I'm trying not to weep when I think about a choice. Leaving a young child with a neighbor that you don't know. Leaving a child in a car. Honest, this is true stuff. This is the real deal. When you're leaving a child in a place that's not safe because you need to interview for that job and you've got 30 to 45 minutes and we don't have any opportunity. And we know that our community is not so different from others, but this is the only facility program of its kind in New York State, the only one, and it's pretty remarkable. We don't know what would happen if we didn't have it. We do know what would happen. Kids would be put at risk. Parents would lose their jobs. Parents would not be able to finish school. A Kendra story, and Kendra is so dear and so wonderful. Kendra is one of those, we love this sort of alum of the crisis nursery because they're so grateful that all we did was call her and say, you know, we've got an opportunity to talk. And she said, I'm there tomorrow to be with you, with Evan, because we have families who want to, it's one of the ways they can give back, right? I also think that we are seeing through the crisis nursery sort of a social autopsy of our community. It gives us an eye. We have 1,063 children with us last year. Each of them have a story. So we find out about our families. We know more about why people struggle. We know more about the resilience in our families. You know, you have a child. Can you imagine when your child was 2 years old, going to the door, ringing the doorbell, or doing an intake and saying, can I leave my child here? I don't know you. That tells you something about crisis and what that means and how difficult that is. And yet the trust is there the minute they meet the staff and they see the house.
Well, you know, when Kendra said, what would she have done if this wasn't an option? And she admitted, you know, maybe you find somebody who you don't know as well, and you're not, you know, as a parent, are you thrilled with that option? No. But are you going to drop out of school? You know, and, you know, Elaine, you just mentioned, you've heard stories of parents, you know, leaving children in cars,
yep.
things like that.
Yep.
And it's so easy to judge being on the outside.
Right.
But when we look at what the Anti-Poverty Initiative has been doing, one of the common refrains we hear is trying to get out of poverty isn't just about, hey, go get a job. It's, do you have the transportation to get there?
Right.
Are the kids cared for at all hours of the day? And these are sort of the interconnected moments that you go, well, if this doesn't exist, what's the alternative here?
Yeah. Right? And the other thing I want to talk about, and of course, Valerie and Marty will share some thoughts as well. There are times when we have families with resources, but the situation is such. We had a 15-month-old that we had in and out through the winter months because his 4-month-old brother was born with very, very serious heart disease and actually died while the 15-month-old was with us. That mother was able to spend time in the hospital. They were at the Ronald McDonald House overnight, but during the day, the 15-month-old could not stay at the hospital nor at Ronald McDonald House. Dad's in another city with a 7-year-old. It's not just about money. It's about resources. It's about connections. It's about making things happen that are safe, and it is a leveler. It's not just about money. You know, when this started, it was actually started by a group of women who had resources, but they didn't have people. Got to have your peeps, right, in order to really feel good. So when you have no family, what do you do? And you make choices that aren't so good. So we've seen some tragedies at the Crisis Nursery. I mean, that's why it's called Crisis, I think. It's an act of real desperation, but we are so grateful to live in a community that cares so deeply about its children that we're able to have this facility at the Center for Youth, the Crisis Nursery.
I want to work through some of the history and understand what it is, what it looks like, what a day is like there. And so in a moment, I'll ask Valerie to help with that. But Elaine, some of the history here. Crisis Nursery was founded when?
The Crisis Nursery actually was founded in the early 2000s by Kate Cerulli and a group of people, and they just had this determination largely because they were, again, women with resources, but who said, what do you do if you're having a postpartum, or what do you do if you don't have family? What do you do if you have emergencies? What do you do? And they started this little program called the Crisis Nursery. And over time, it grew to finally find a location on Genesee Park Boulevard. And about 5 years, now Kate had come to me, and I had been at the Center for Youth for a minute, and said, you know, can we buddy up here? Because we need a parent, we need a mother, right? And I'm the great mother of the community sometimes. And I said, I've only been at the center a second. Let me get my sea legs in. Well, she came back 10 years later. And of course, Kate is a great, great friend, and I wish she could have been with us, but she's not available today. But she came back and said, okay, can we do it now? And I said, yes, because they were going to close.
So your merger happened in like 2013, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The merger is the official merger. We did a non-asset dissolution. You know, I'm a lawyer, so I have to tell you the technical terms.
If you used another term like that, you're going to lose half the audience.
I know. Sorry. We merged.
Okay.
We adopted the Crisis Nursery. Sorry. Let me, a layperson's talk here. But anyway, we made it happen, and officially we brought them under our umbrella and changed anything we needed to. You know, the center, when I got there, was dealing with 12 to 21-year-olds. The center now works with 2-day-olds to 24-year-olds. And we have stretched that continuum. We did have a 2-day-old baby, believe it or not. And little teeny, teeny babies come to us. And almost all of our children are under 6, certainly under 8 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're little. They're little ones. And we can have a family cohort where you could have as much as a 14-year-old if it's part of a family. But the majority of the kids are young. I did not want the Crisis Nursery to fold. It was not an option. And my team, Valerie being the leader of this particular team, are so resilient and so open-hearted. And we do things, sometimes are called Elaine's Follies. This one turned out to be okay. There always like shaking their heads at me, but you know, we've got to do the right thing, and we have at the center the capacity, the will, and the team to do it. And so we did.
1,063 kids cared for
in 2015.
In 2015.
Right. Twice as many as the year before.
So almost 10,000 total hours of care. But what's the average stay for a kid there?
Oh, gosh, it could be an afternoon and it could be 4 weeks off and on. So, you know, that's the other thing. You said something about no judgment. We are not in the position of judging our families. And that's one of the mantras at the Center for Youth, even with our older homeless kids. You know, but for the grace of God go many of us. So somebody may come in. Kendra needed us for 2 weeks. That's sometimes unusual for us. But we knew Kendra. We knew how important it was to her. But when little Kyle was with us off and on, his four-month-old brother was, since the time he was born, they needed our help. So off and on, they've been with us. We've had a lot of increase in domestic violence victims, moms who are victims of domestic violence, mm-hmm. who bring the kids to us for safety purposes, and that can be going on for a while.
And that has got to be, that particular scenario has got to just be, first of all, so difficult to see, but then to try to figure out when is okay for the child to leave the crisis?
Well, you know, and Val can talk about that. That increase has been the most shocking increase of all in the last couple years, and in really tragic situations where we've had moms whose spouses or significant others have actually beat them while holding the children, and the children end up with us while mom is seeking security and safety. Sometimes people will take in an adult and they won't take in the three kids with her. We see that a great deal, and I mean, Valerie may want to expand on that, but that's, we're often seeing that.
And Elaine, we've talked on this program and in this community about the impact of trauma.
Yes.
You know, kids who grew up in poverty see a lot more that qualifies as trauma, and they experience trauma. Sometimes that's physical violence that they're seeing. Sometimes it's visited upon them. Sometimes other things. But is part of the mission basically identifying kids who are going down that path and saying, we've got to try to shield them in some way from that kind of trauma.
You know, again, Valerie can expand, but some of the kids, we've had babies who stay with us who need to be held almost the whole time they're there. Even like a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old. So a lot of the costs of the nursery, which are skyrocketing, and I'm not going to make an appeal, although I am shameless about fundraising.
No, I've got some questions on that.
I know. Okay, I'm shameless.
Elaine did not say, let me come in and beg for money, but I do want to know about cost, and
yes.
I want to know about needs. So we'll get there.
I'm shameless about that because we have had to involve and hire and have relief workers because we have babies who need to be held the whole entire time they're with us.
Wow.
I mean, you know, Kendra's kids are pretty easy compared to some other babies that come. But when you have a family that's in tremendous crisis, or we had a little boy whose mom died in the hospital while he was with us, that's another whole level, right? So, yeah.
All right. So I want to know kind of what it looks like and how it sets up there. Valerie Douglas is with the Center for Youth and you're on the Crisis Nursery is on Genesee Park Boulevard. What's it look like? Kind of give us a little mental picture.
Yeah, you wouldn't know it driving down the street. It looks like any other house, a cute little house. And that's really kind of a key component is we want folks immediately when they drive up to drop off their children to feel like it's not an institution, it's not foster care, it's not a strange place, it's not labeling them when they walk in the door. So it's just got a house number on it, and folks come in, and it's a tiny little house. It looks like any other normal house with a kitchen and a living room and a baby day room and then some bedrooms upstairs. So there's nothing that says you're at even like a preschool or an institution. So the children walk in and just feel like it's they're at a friend's house or they're
Grandma's house.
Yeah, yeah. and the staff there do a magical job. I don't even know how they do it half the time of making a crisis response where we respond 24 hours feel like home. So when a family comes in to bring their child, the staff are, it's not reactive or excited or agitated. It's, oh, hey, welcome, come sit down, get some juice, we have some paperwork, let me show you around the house. It's all very smooth, very comforting. all about reducing the trauma. We want the children and the parent to not have the nursery be part of the crisis. It's a response to the crisis, but we never want it to be something that agitates or increases the trauma and the drama of the situation.
At any given time, if I were to pop over in an afternoon, how many kids will be there?
It can depend. We can have up to 7 kids at one time. That would normally be a family, a cohort of 6 or 7. But it'll be 1 child, 2 children, maybe for an hour. Then we'll have a gap, and then other kids will come in overnight. So it's this miracle of scheduling and juggling, staffing and volunteers, and really getting to know the families as quickly as possible when they call about the crisis. We have very few, there's no barriers other than if the child has a medical issue that we can't treat while they're with us, or the person calling is not the guardian of the child. Other than that, and even transportation we've kind of addressed because we have our own car now, there's very few barriers. So families sometimes call in the middle of a crisis and are so used to being asked a bunch of questions to weed them out of getting a service that they don't even trust or believe that we're just getting information to bring them in. That, you know, they get kind of defensive, or they're like, why do you want to know that? And we're like, because we want you in and we want to best serve your child. And often they're so surprised that it's that easy. And around the trauma as well, it's not just about a crisis of I'm having a medical emergency or I'm in a homeless shelter. Homeless shelters can't watch children. So if the parent has a job interview or all those things you need to do to get out of homelessness, we help. But it could be a young mom or dad who is, I'm at my wit's end. My baby has been colicky or has been crying for 3 nights. I haven't slept. I'm stressed. I have no one I trust to leave my baby with. I need a good night's sleep. And that is reducing trauma for the parent, but also for the child, to bring the baby in for a night or the toddler in and help the parent get a good night's sleep so they can keep parenting to best their ability.
How many staff?
We have only 2 full-time staff.
She's looking at me. Do you see that look? She just gave me a look across.
As in, like, hire somebody else?
I know, man. Immediately.
Looking over at the boss going, hey, I'm glad you asked.
We have 2 full-time staff. That includes the program manager, Faith. The rest are relief workers, which means it's per diem, per crisis, and volunteers. We have amazing, dedicated volunteers that have been with us for years who help fill in gaps and come in for extra. If we have 2 different sets of families at one time, and maybe 1 child is a bit more hyper and needs some one-on-one attention, or is a baby that needs to be held all the time, the volunteer will come in. We always have at least 2 staff there, no matter how many children are there, in order to create a very safe environment for the children and for the staff.
Are infants the biggest challenge?
You know, no, I wouldn't say infants are the biggest challenge in terms of caring for. They're probably the most utilized as infants, but toddlers can be a challenge because that's when a lot of the behavior stuff starts to come out, and children who have experienced trauma and disconnection and been moving around from a shelter to here and there, they are just, they are beside themselves sometimes. So we try to make it as comfortable and as caring for them. So we're not disciplining children. We're not doing a lot of stuff like that. So we're trying to distract and redirect and engage and, hey, look over here at the shiny dinosaur. So that can be the most challenging in terms of just trying to make sure the environment isn't more traumatizing to the toddler than the situation at home. And again, Kendra's children were a breeze, but we do get, you know, those terrible 2s or those 3-year-olds who are just inconsolable.
Well, let's do this. That's the only break of the hour, and I want to come back. We're going to find out the role of Golisano Children's Hospital in this partnership. And the reason, if you're just joining us, we're having this conversation now, well, there's several reasons. We've had a lot of conversations about the Anti-Poverty Initiative, about the various threads in our community. And what we have been learning is that there are so many different layers that go into addressing poverty and helping kids in crisis and helping kids with trauma and helping single parents and things like that. And the crisis nursery is not something that a lot of people know about. So we wanted to not only understand what they're doing. When we come back here, I also want to understand how the mission maybe has grown, and if there were, I don't say unlimited resources, but if there were more resources, you know, how many kids could you help a year? I mean, they're helping more than 1,000 children a year in Rochester. But how would that mission change? And what does it say about the community that that need is there right now? So let's get a short break and continue the conversation in just one moment on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, you've heard of STEM education. What about STEAM education? It's when science, technology, engineering, and math adds an A for art. But you might be wondering, what does art have to do with STEM? Some say nothing, and that STEM should not become STEAM. Others say there's a utility in adding art, creativity, and new approaches. We'll talk STEM versus STEAM next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we're learning about the Crisis Nursery in Rochester this hour, which goes back to 2004, founded by Kate Cerulli and a group of people who were concerned about, well, just helping parents and children in crisis in our community, and it has grown. And in 2013, the Center for Youth merged with the Crisis Nursery. And so here in studio with us for this hour, Elaine Spalls, the executive director of the Center for Youth. Valerie Douglas is with the Center for Youth. And Kendra Smallwood's here. She's a parent of four who has used the Crisis Nursery several times, and they have helped her in many ways. You've been hearing her story. Marty Sandler is here as well, a chief social worker for Golisano Children's Hospital. And Marty, what's the role of Golisano Children's Hospital and sort of the connection with the Crisis Nursery?
Well, and it's not just the Golisano Children's Hospital. It's the hospital in general, mm-hmm. because, and I just have to say, thank goodness for Elaine Spall and her willingness to help, because we were really concerned the Crisis Nursery was going away before the center.
A few years ago?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the other areas where we are really partnering with Crisis Nursery is, imagine that you're a mom of small children, maybe your husband partner's out of town doing business, and suddenly you have a medical emergency requiring 911. EMT comes to the house. You don't have anyone in town. You're new to the area. They bring those children with the acutely ill mother to the emergency room of Strong Memorial Hospital. And hopefully you haven't had to visit the emergency room lately, but it's a pretty chaotic, busy place. Now you got children totally unattended in an emergency room and a mother going off for her CAT scan and maybe surgery. And what do we do? And it's a real problem for us. And thank goodness we have the Crisis Nursery. Because I don't know what we would do. And we actually have worked out arrangements with one of our ambulance companies that we transport these children via an ambulette, they call it, over to the Crisis Nursery, which you know is now located on Genesee Street, very close to us. What we try to do, we have a nice PowerPoint. We show the mother pictures of the house so she's comfortable. It is a very homey place. This is what it looks like. They do sign a consent that they'll admit the child. We try to determine if there's any medical needs for the children. If they are an infant, what's the formula and so forth for you all. And off they go to the Crisis Nursery. So that is really important to us. We also serve a very large area, as you know, well into the Finger Lakes. We have families coming from very far.
Yeah, I keep saying Rochester, but it's a broad area.
It's really a broad area. So similar to what Kendra experienced, we have parents coming in with very chronically ill or complex, medically complex children requiring surgery. They have other children at home. They're playing this game of who's going to stay home 2 hours away, who's going to be at the hospital. If these children have to go home with like G-tubes, all sorts. Oh, I won't go into the medical lingo either. That could be a problem, I'm sure, just like legal lingo. But they need to be really comfortable in caring for these children before they go home. So they have to spend a lot of time at the hospital learning how to care for their children, being trained in many areas. And the Crisis Nursery, again, similarly to your story, Kendra, is a place that children can go, mm-hmm. Because we offer only limited watching in our kids' club at the New Children's Hospital. So this is really a place they can go. They can spend the day. They are fed, cared for. Mom and dad are comfortable. And they can really attend to the child that seriously needs their full attention at that point in time.
When you talk about medical needs for parents, you know, I go back to last week. We had a conversation about single parenthood. Most of the time in this country, 84% of the time, when there's a single parent head of household, it's the mom. Mm-hmm. But not always, most of the time. And we talked about the challenge for single mothers. And one of our panelists was a single mom, not living in poverty, not affluent, who even described just going to the dentist and mm-hmm. had to bring her child. Mm-hmm. And the dentist said, you know, they can't stay in the corner of the room here with an iPad. We're going to have to put them out in the waiting room. And the child was not comfortable with that. And mom said, I'm canceling the dental appointment. You know, mm-hmm. that's just one example. But what it shows you is how much we take for granted, particularly for families that are not in single, if there's two parents in the household or if there are resources, maybe there's family around. Kendra, you mentioned, you know, you don't have family around mm-hmm. here. So it's just so easy to take for granted all of those different things, from dentist appointments to medical appointments. Medical emergencies, a whole other kettle mm-hmm. of fish. Mm-hmm. But is it a case, Marty, for you where, you know, they've got a limit in terms of space? Are you just in contact with them? You know their space, you sign it up, and you can get someone over there?
We call them, like, in the middle of the night,
right,
actually.
Right.
And if hopefully they answer the phone. Usually they do, right? Especially if they have a child already there. But there was a period of time, I think, before the Center for Youth took right. over there, it was much more sporadic. And it was just maybe they'll be available, maybe they won't. So that's a real problem. I think you make a really good point, is that all parents need support. And, you know, you may have family here, but they may all be working. You know, people need to work. It's usually a two-parent household that works these days. So there just aren't as many resources. There's not a great place where you can drop off your children for your dentist appointment or other things you need to do.
All right, well, let's talk about growth then. Elaine Spall, you serve more than 1,000 kids.
Yeah, and Marty's triggering two very specific
sure.
stories. So one was a story of a young woman, a mom with a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old at Strong Museum, innocently going through Strong Museum and falls to the ground and is having a seizure.
The mom.
No previous medical history. Dad is deployed in Afghanistan. So she's here with no family. She finds herself taken away in an ambulance. This may be what you're remembering. I don't remember all the other details, but there was a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old in the waiting room while mom is seizing and in a coma. And until her mother could get here from an out of town, like 2 or 3 days, these little girls, well, they came to us. Mm-hmm. And in the old days, before the center got involved, it might have been hit and miss. So we don't have anybody for you. I'm so sorry. That will never happen. Marty, when you say usually they answer the phone, that better be 99.99%.
Now they answer the phone.
Okay, good. Because Bella and I are like, what? Because yes. And that's why it's so darn expensive. It's so darn expensive because you're doubling up on staff constantly. Mm-hmm. If you have six children, and many of them are trauma, been involved with trauma. You may have 5 staff members there. Now you're going to have, we have 50 active volunteers. They are angels. We love them. But we also know that you might not want 5 or 6 different people touching the lives of a child in a 24-hour period. So that's one of the drama that I'm facing right now. I need to have more full-time staff. So there's an 8 to 10-hour shift, not somebody who's in and out every 2 hours. And, you know, our babies are resilient, but it's a lot of hands on a baby. Mm-hmm. One of our most recent cases, and one that is just so reflective of what may happen, a young, again, single mom, a wonderful, wonderful woman, loves her child, has MS and suffers from seizure and had a 24-hour seizure. She was seizing for 24. Now, her parents are here. Her parents were by her bedside. They thought they were losing their daughter. Right. So what happened to the little girl? She came to us. This young mom, who is just amazingly resilient, I mean, such serious medical problems, but she was able to nod her head in consent, because we have to have consent to take a child in. Mm-hmm. And we took that little girl, and she's been with us off and on and comes back whenever her mom needs an infusion. So a lot of times, you know, in terms of not judgment, these are young families who need help. So what do we have going on right now? Right now, we are having the kind of issues, and Valerie can help me with this, where we are never going to turn away Marty Sandler, right? But we may have to turn away somebody who just needs us for a couple hours, and we ask them, are you sure there's no place else you can go? Because we are finding ourselves at capacity. We are finding ourselves turning families away. Somebody said to me, what, you turned a baby away? I'm like, yeah, we turned a baby away. We probably didn't, but we might have to. So we have 2 real needs right now. One is that we need to stabilize and add some resources in the little house we have right now. When I look at the budget, it's almost all salary. I mean, people give us diapers, people give us formula, people give us food, they give us Windex, paper towels.
Are you collecting that, by the way?
Absolutely.
You always are.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We have a food cupboard called The Nook, and it's got everything from tuna fish to toilet paper. We're all about that. 905 Monroe Avenue, we're open till 9 o'clock. No.
Lane never misses a
chance. No shame. But the point is this, that we also have staff, good, qualified, mastered, prepared staff. We want people there who are not just going to hang out. We have to have staff. We also need a second site. We need a crisis nursery in every quadrant. That's what we need. If you live on Hudson Avenue or Clifford Avenue and you have to get to Genesee Park Boulevard without your own vehicle, you're taking buses, you're trying to figure it out, and sometimes it just is too hard. We have a little Ford Focus. We can go help pick people up. We have car seats. But, you know, we find our families. I mean, Kendra luckily has a vehicle. She's got some transportation. Some of our families, they don't have transportation. They can't get around. So you have to make it easy and on a bus line. But if you're coming from the north, the tip of the northeast or like Webster Avenue or around that area, over to Genesee Park Boulevard. And as much as I love Strong, Strong is not the only hospital that accesses the nursery. We have an enormous amount of connections with all the other hospitals and facilities in town. So we need at least one or two more.
But realistically, what does that mean?
Realistically,
how much money are you talking about?
It's probably, let's say the house is gifted to me and it's up to standards. It's $200,000 a year per site. It's not a fortune. It's something this community can handle, believe me. You know, I run Fashion Week for one reason. Well, we have fun. But Fashion Week raised $500,000 last year. The profit was $325,000. $200,000 went right back into our shelters. That's why we run Fashion Week. So come on, buy tickets in October. But the point is this. We live in a community where we can and should help each other, and we know how to do it. This is poverty busting at another level. And it's also adding value. Kendra can tell you, her children left us not just sort of satisfactorily cared for, but happier.
Oh, yeah. Even when I say stuff like, oh, we're going to the crisis nursery. And they're like, yeah, we're going to the crisis nursery. Other kids are like, what? You're happy about going to the crisis nursery? They're like, yeah. So it's like they're happy. It's like, oh, if you don't eat your food, you're not going to the crisis nursery to get to eating. So it's a privilege for them to go. It's not just, oh, you know, I have this situation. It's like, I have this situation and I know I can rely on a crisis. I know they're going to be cared for. I know my kids are going to be loved and they don't want to leave. It's a fight to get them to leave. It's like, I got this toy. I got this thing that you really want, and it's dragging them out. But it feels good to know that I just had a bad situation. I took my kids someplace safe and they don't want to leave.
Absolutely. And by the way, I'm sure our listeners may know that Elaine Spall, who's the executive director of the Center for Youth, is also a member of City Council. And for that reason, I'm wondering, have you looked around the country? Are there crisis nurseries like this in other cities? Are there models like this?
No.
I mean, why not?
I don't know. I mean, we know they're not in New York State. We know that for sure. And we know that there are some that are connected to hospitals around the country. But as you know, it's not just like Kendra didn't have her own medical need. So, Valerie, I think we don't have models very far outside of what we're doing that we follow. I'm sure there's other programs maybe that have some kind of services, maybe daytime services. But this is a 24/7 operation.
Roughly correct, Valerie, you think?
Yeah, I think there's one in Minnesota potentially that is similar. Some of them that I've seen are a little more institutional, a little more like a daycare. We are not a certified daycare, so we don't have all of the kind of nuts and bolts and regulations that make it have to look so antiseptic and not a homey environment. So that's very different for us. We're very much more, and we also have the lowest kind of barriers to access. We're not screening people out when they call. We're not asking, do you have a DSS grant? Are you? What's your income? Have you used us before?
All right, so let me just jump in then. Somebody calls you. Mm-hmm. What's the conversation like?
The conversation is, what's happening? Where are you? Are you safe right now? how old are your children? Do they have medical needs? How long do you think you'll need us? What's the exit plan? Right? So we always need to know, have some kind of ballpark idea of, is it going to be a couple hours? Is it going to be a couple days? And then do you have any kind of backup, any people who we want to have some phone number, some kind of contact, whether it be a social worker mm-hmm. or a friend who, if there's a crisis with a child while you're having a crisis and we can't get a hold of you, we can get someone else involved. Can you get here? Do you need transportation? Are there medical issues with your child?
That's it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really the conversation is about, just, you know, is there stuff you want us to know about the behavior? If your child has some behavior issues, that won't screen them out either, but tell us what they are so we can best meet the needs of your child.
But Valerie, you point out that at the crisis nursery, you don't have all of, for lack of a better term, the same rules that a daycare would have.
Right.
And that makes me wonder, you know, Elaine mentioned up to 50 volunteers, you've got two full-time mm-hmm. staff. But what is the requirement in terms of to be a volunteer or to work? You've got to be certified in XYZ or how does that work?
Yes, we still do the screening, the criminal background checks of all of our volunteers and our staff at the same that a daycare would. So they don't have to necessarily have a job history in daycare, but we need to be able to pass the criminal history check, child abuse screening for New York State, and we're monitored by the Justice Center and OCFS. We have to meet their regulations to have our certification. But in terms of kind of what else it takes to be a volunteer, it has to be someone who really wants to be around kids and likes toddlers who might be acting out and be willing to just have distract and redirect sessions for 2 hours, you know, and want to be judgment-free and caring of the families that walk in. So we work a lot with the volunteers and staff, relief staff, around these stories are hard. And you might have in the back of your head some judgment, but this is not the place to be saying it or sharing it or expressing it, that we're here to make sure that the children feel cared for and loved at the time.
To be clear, Kendra's story, which we opened the hour with, is, I think, representative of a lot of families where mm-hmm. the parent has to make hard decisions going to class. You lose child care or daycare. You may lose, you know, some kind of opportunity for help and you need somewhere to go. Mm-hmm. You know, Marty mentioned medical emergencies where something happens in the middle of the night or, mm-hmm. you know, something, as Elaine said, happens. You're walking through Strong Museum and you don't have an alternative. Those things are obviously important. But Elaine, it's also, I think, important to point out, once again, that at least some of the kids that you're helping are going through significantly more grave situations.
Very serious. I mean, I would never want to paint this as all, you know, isn't this fun? We love kids, and we do. But I have to tell you, we're seeing some really tragic situations. The domestic violence ones are unbearable. They're unbearable to me, and they're unbearable to the staff. And you know that, you know, when you have a mom that brings her kids, you know, I get weepy because I'm Italian, Evan, so don't worry. You have a mom who brings her kids to us, and her face is almost unrecognizable because she's been beaten on the street while holding a child, her own child, and now has to run for cover. We have the kids. We're taking the kids, and nobody else is going to take those kids. And you don't want to put them in emergency foster care because the mom does. I mean, that was one of the things that Kendra was offered, emergency foster care. No, I don't want to give up my child. I don't want to be a part of a system. I don't want to be a person who's asking the government to help me. I can do this, but I just need a hand right now in the moment. But some of the things that we see, you know, the center also works the Safe Harbor, the sex trafficking programs. We've taken on the hardest work in this community, and God bless the staff. I have to tell you, Marty thanked me, but it's the people who are behind me who are not afraid. And if you have a baby that's with you while the mom or while an older brother is, or the younger brother is dying in the hospital, you better be pretty courageous. This is courageous, brave work. And I'm deeply grateful. And I think this is what Rochester does. I mean, it sort of fits here.
because we've not been afraid to take on the hardest, the most difficult, and we'll continue to do it. We need help, and people help us. I mean, people give us grants, and people give us diapers, and we got 1,000 diapers from Rock City Bottoms, and we thought, we don't need them all.
But we talked to them on this program.
Oh, we
cool
love
people.
Them. Oh, my God,
cool
we love them. And you know that women have been forced to dry out a diaper and put it back on their babies.
Yeah. We see a lot of diaper rash, Elaine, believe me, in pediatric clinic.
Can you imagine?
Rock City might end diaper rash.
Right.
Rock City Bottoms, yeah, that's cool.
Rock City Bottoms, I mean, you're reusing a diaper, but you know what? This is, or you're leaving your child with a neighbor that you don't know, with a man you don't know, with a friend who you don't know and or not even know very well. This is happening, and that's why I say it gives us a social autopsy. I know that sounds like a pretty serious term. I love to use that term because I think we get intelligence about our needs as a community. We know more about our community and what they need, and my city council district, as you know, is the richest and the poorest, sort of straddles two neighborhoods, and those neighborhoods need help as well. Mm-hmm. So, Evan, again, I'm grateful to you for always bringing to the forefront some issues that need to be talked about. We are, you know, centerforyouth.net, 473-2464, and people know me, call me, and we're shameless about the need. We can't imagine anything more important than helping to save our families.
Are you in an active campaign trying to get a second location right
every
now?
Every minute.
Okay. So technically...
I'm in an active campaign trying to stabilize the shelter we have, the nursery we have. We need to hire... You saw Val... You could... Everybody... Valerie was giving me the stink eye. It's radio, so you couldn't see it, but she's so dear about it. But, you know, we need more full-time, stable people who can be there 25, 30 hours a week. So the same face is there when Kendra comes, or the same face is there when the mom comes back three or four days in a row. We need to do that, and then we need to add another site.
Do you realistically think a second site is possible?
Absolutely.
No, but I mean, in a year, in 2 years, in three? Yes?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep,
I do. But you're also like the most optimistic person. Like, you're obnoxiously optimistic.
You know, I love you too.
So I want your realistic assessment, not the Elaine Spall assessment.
I'm envisioning it. Yes.
Do you really think it's going to happen?
It will happen.
Well, I think the nursery is really positioned. It's kind of the eye of the hurricane. So we have lots of systems and lots of services in Rochester and Monroe County, but they don't always work together, or they don't do everything. So you're in a homeless shelter, but you can't get childcare at the homeless shelter.
Right.
You're going to DSS work requirements, but you don't have childcare. Mm-hmm. And the nursery doesn't care where you're at. We're going to help you navigate all those services. So I think that we're in a position, as these initiatives move forward, to do this anti-poverty work, to support those efforts and be a key player in making sure that all those different silos are talking to each other.
And I have to say, I don't think that the community really knows about the crisis nursery. If people really knew about the crisis nursery, I think, you know, you would not be able to keep up with all the people calling you. And so, because it sounds like a scary place, crisis nursery, you know, and you have to explain it. But as word gets out, and I talked, and we also run community-based child abuse prevention programs, and we use the crisis nursery, as Elaine discussed, for mothers who are afraid that, you know, their children are going to be removed, you know, if they did use something, or if it looks like they're not taking care of their children. And we have to work with them to say, no, this is a support to get services. So.
Let me sneak in one phone call, because Joel's been waiting to jump in. Go ahead, Joel.
Hi. Great work that you do, Elaine, and I wanted to thank you. And then really quickly ask, it seems like a number of different places around the country are considering animals with regards to domestic violence laws. And I'm wondering if we can provide a safe haven for not only the children and their mothers, but also the animal and their animal companions.
I think Willow is doing it.
Joel, thanks for the phone call. We're almost out of time, Elaine. So
I think
Willow is doing it.
So Willow is?
Formerly ABW. Okay. They're going to have pets that are going to be able to go with the families. Yeah. We see that with homeless youth too. Mm-hmm. Teens and homeless youth will not give up their pets to get it out of dangerous situations. So it's definitely something this community is looking at.
Jill, thank you. Keep positive thoughts about the Center for Youth. God bless you. Thank you so much.
And let me just go down, if you missed The number we've been saying is more than 1,000 kids a year served by the crisis nursery, and here's the breakdown of why. 39% of families were experiencing a medical emergency, as Marty has described. 25% of families needed respite care. 14% were experiencing a domestic violence-related crisis, and 11% of caregivers had a work-related issue or job interview. And that 14% number with a domestic violence-related crisis, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
That is 150 kids a year
yep.
who need that kind of help. So, yep. Elaine, yep. we're out of time, but they can find more information. They can see what it more sort of what it looks like yep. and learn yep. more online.
Absolutely. Centerforyouth.net, 473-2464, or like me on Facebook. I probably have most of you as friends.
Okay. Well, you know, when I call you obnoxiously optimistic, you know that's not a pejorative.
I know. It's a term of love.
Elaine Spall is the executive director of the Center for Youth, and Valerie Douglas here from the Center for Youth talking about the crisis nursery. Thank you. Thanks, Elaine. Valerie, thank you so much, and thanks for the work that you and your staff are doing there. Really remarkable stuff. Kendra Smallwood, a parent, thanks for sharing your story, and good luck to you.
Thanks for having me.
And Marty Sandler from Golisano Children's Hospital, thanks for the work that you do as well. Great to see
thank
you here.
You.
Short break. More Connections next.